What is up, everybody? Anthony Vasquez here, joined by my guest today, relationship therapist Francesca Churchione. Today, we got into all things involving relationships, setting parameters, finding the love you want. She gave some amazing insight that every one of us can use in our lives. So without further ado, I bring you the brilliant Francesca Churchione. What is up, everybody? I am joined today by the one, the only Francesca, my friend, therapist in New York City. And I'm really excited. I've had a bunch of guests on, and I'll say you're one of the most excited I am to talk to, because I'm just so curious about the insight and input that you have on relationships, right? And I have so many questions for you.
I hope I'm ready.
I think, the motivation to have you on was, I think just right now, you know, personally, I can attest to the struggles entrepreneurs, you know, and I think a lot of my listeners have when they come on. And it's always ironic because, you know, just when you got here, we spoke privately for a couple of minutes and we're like, hey, this is going on in life or that's going on in life. So many times people have this public persona of everything is great in life. My relationship is fabulous. And then I talk to them privately afterwards. They're like, bro, things are tough. You know, I'm about to get divorced. Yeah. I haven't seen or spent any time with my family or my wife in the past, you know, 3 months. My business is incredibly successful, but, you know, there's always that one thing that's going to suffer, right? So having had so many conversations now, I was like, wow, it'd be great to get you on and then start to pick your brain about this. So if you could just tell everyone a little bit about yourself. I know you are a proud fellow NYU alum.
Yes, I am.
Yep, please.
So I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I have a private practice down in Tribeca. I've been in the field for the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. I've worked in a variety of settings, from hospitals to universities, outpatient mental health clinics, and have done my training in relational psychotherapy. So I now specialize in working with people trying to help improve their relationships with themselves, mm-hmm. first and foremost, and also their relationships with others. So I work with individuals and with couples to make it better.
So that's interesting. You jump right in when you say working with yourself first.
Yeah.
Right? Can you tell me why you said that? Like what's the importance of the self-reflection, right?
Sure.
Prior to the...
So we have to know what makes us tick in mm-hmm. order to understand how we can connect to others. So having awareness of who we are, where we come from, what matters to us, what doesn't, what triggers us. Without knowing and having a good sense of who you are, you really can't show up for somebody else.
Mm. So I think one question and one thing that I know has been a central focus in my personal life is I'm very entrepreneurial. So we'll butcher me with self-deprecating.
Great.
Right now. Let's get into it. Right. So I'm very entrepreneurial from a young age. I was selling baseball cards. Right. It's always been my thing. Extremely success driven, extremely work oriented. Right. And as I've matured as a man, I've seen that potentially wreaks havoc in other aspects of your life, because what you're so good at in one aspect, you're so terrible at potentially in other aspects. So, you know, I always say, like, in my office, I'm not the most organized, but Sylvia is incredibly organized. So I can outsource my organization. Whereas in relationship with a female partner, right, you can't always outsource those kind of things, right? So how do you create that sacred time, that space, and be able to give as much in many aspects as we are to our businesses as we are to our partners?
So I actually think that the first important thing to think about as you describe yourself as a business person and an entrepreneur is actually not to distinguish between being a businessman and being a man in a relationship. They can very much be one and the same. The things that it takes to be a good businessman are the exact same things that it takes to be a good partner. To be committed, to be collaborative, to be communicative, to dedicate yourself to something that really matters to you, to be intentional. So you actually have a great foundation to apply to your partnership. Maybe the partnership has to become more of a priority. But that is to say, you really know how to do it.
Okay.
You know how to work with others.
Okay.
And you know how to make something meaningful
and
successful.
What are the first steps you take in that? Yeah. So if you're advising someone, where do you go? Like, what's the basis for that? Like, where do you start?
So the first is always communication. Communication is key. It's the most important. You hear it over and over again for good reason. Mm-hmm. If you can't talk to each other, then you can't connect. But talking is not enough. You have to be able to listen. Mm-hmm. And you also have to be able to hear.
Okay.
Okay. So someone could talk at you all day long. And unless you're open to receiving what they're saying, it's not going to go anywhere. So communication is really the most important step. The second really important thing is to establish a sense of intimacy between you and your partner. You have to know what that means for you and for your partner. It might not be the same thing. Intimacy has become a euphemism for sex, but it's not. You can have sex without intimacy, and you can have intimacy without sex. Intimacy is really an emotional connection between two people. It's being able to be vulnerable, sharing what you're feeling, what you're thinking, what you're fearing, and having your partner make space for that to maybe meet those needs, but maybe to just hear you in that. So dropping in, having a way to connect intimately, establishing that from the get-go, what really feels good and connected to you and what feels really good and connected to me, and being able to go back to that place. If you're this busy business person, you don't have that much time.
Correct.
So knowing what works and going back there.
It also brings up something I think is interesting too, like as a male entrepreneur, right, when we decipher that, and someone who operates in such a masculine bias, as men can be so hard sometimes to find that intimate space, because we're, you know, I think our culture has defined us as men shouldn't have feelings, men should never be vulnerable. You know, I personally grew up with my father, who I adore, I admire, but he is, you know, I've talked about this many times, came to this country, immigrated from Puerto Rico, 22 years old, no English. He was that prototypical Latin male, right? Like there was not much emotion. He's told me he's proud of me twice, maybe loved me two or three times my entire life. I'm almost 40. So we don't necessarily as men, a lot of times have that modeled, right? Like,
yeah,
so
as from a woman's perspective,
it's like, you don't cry. Like if we see an athlete cry, we're like, oh, what a wuss immediately. Yeah. No one's like, oh, what a sensitive man he must be. He's probably a great husband to his wife because he cries. It's like, oh, that guy's a baby, right? So we haven't had that socially reinforced. So, and I can imagine as a woman, you probably want your man to be vulnerable, right? And to open up, right? Like that's that connection.
Yep.
But sometimes I feel like we don't even necessarily know how.
Absolutely. And I see that a fair amount in my practice. We are culturally in a moment right now where we're experiencing a real paradox in masculinity, right? So gender roles are changing and evolving, and we expect our partners to kind of be it all, when at the same time, we're not teaching men how to be emotional, how to be communicative, how to be vulnerable. Vulnerability in a patriarchal system is absolutely a weakness.
1,000%.
So there isn't very much of a dialogue. In fact, a lot of times the women are dragging the men in to do the therapy.
Sure.
And the men are relieved because they have a space and a way of learning the language. It's no longer, well, it's shifting from being seen as this weakness, this vulnerability, to something that's actually very necessary. If now partnerships are moving in a direction where they're more equal, then emotionally we have to be on similar footing.
So for that, in that scenario, right? So you have a man, I'm a man, right? You know, like it's that patriarchal mindset. How do you begin to take those steps to open up to your partner and to be, to operate more in your, you know, in the emotional realm?
Okay. So again, it comes back to you first, right? So having some awareness about how you operate, what your family was like, what you expect. Once you have awareness, you can begin to shift the way you relate to others, creating a safe space within the relationship, really trusting your partner and feeling as though your partner's not going to knock you and see you as weak because of this. The another way is to begin to learn the language, emotional language. It's not something that comes normally or naturally to most men. It's not something that they're taught to do. So I feel, right? Not you are. I feel.
Okay.
I feel this thing. I feel this way.
Okay. So it could be like, I feel upset.
Yeah.
Okay.
Getting specific, upset can be a little vague, but getting specific, I feel angry, right? Anger is one of the ones that men are really encouraged to experience emotionally.
Like, we have no problem.
No problem. Like raging out, right? But I feel sad.
Okay.
I feel really loved right now. Whoa, that That's a rare one.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever said that in my life. Yeah.
Right now I'm working with a couple that's culturally pretty diverse. She's from the Midwest and he's from the Middle East.
Well.
Yes. And so for him, he's very concerned about doing what is right, right? Mm-hmm. Doing the right thing for her, not even in this larger moral sense, but what is the right answer?
Mm.
As opposed to what do I feel? Mm-hmm. Or what does she feel? Mm-hmm. What do we need? So stepping away from what is right and what is a man supposed to do in this situation and dropping in to yourself and saying, okay, what is actually going on for me? Because most of the time, I think you have a bit of awareness around it. It's just, there's a disconnect between what you feel and what you speak.
So then in relation to our partners, right? So let's say I'm hypothetically in a relationship, right?
Yep.
But I don't feel safe. How does a woman get that man to open up, right? Mm. That's what she wants, mm-hmm. right? He doesn't know even how to do it, but she's like, hey, I see something, like he's not opening up.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I know if a girl came to me and said, I need you to open up to me, I'd be like, what? Without us even knowing, how do they get us to do it?
Well, I don't think that they do it in this sneaky way without,
without in a loving, you know, mindful way.
I think it has to be built. It has to be co-constructed, right? You have to show up wanting to open up and they have to be willing to receive you. So what that looks like is a bit specific to each person, but generally speaking, creating an environment that is supportive, loving, non-judgmental, where talk is acceptable, and where there's room to figure things out or mess up without feeling really chastised. So trust, compassion, communication, also being vulnerable. When somebody shows up and is vulnerable with you, you feel much more at ease being vulnerable with them.
Right now, I know this, we talked about this really quickly, but social media or iPhones or smart technology, right? I think is horrible in a lot of ways. Like it has great things. My business, your business, we can create these platforms and these amazing communities. Yeah. And we have access to things, you know, you can share wisdom with millions of people. Whereas, you know, before, if you didn't have a TV show, that wasn't feasible. But the downside to that is it pervades every aspect of our life.
Yeah.
Right? And I know that for me, I feel like literally there should be a space in the home where there is no phones or laptops.
Yeah.
And for me, that's the bedroom, right? Mm-hmm. I hate.
Or TVs.
Guilty of TVs. But I hate phones and or laptops in the bed, right? Because I feel like it's like, wow, all right, the work day's done.
Mm-hmm.
And now the work, no matter what, you're still checking that email. And I just read a study, I think, that it takes the brain, I think it said, if you read a negative email or something that affects you negatively, it takes, I think it was 48 minutes for the brain to actually, it was a long time that you're, that even though you're
process out,
to process
negativity,
that emotion out. So if you're in bed with your partner at 10 PM and you check that email, it's now 10:48 till you've reset and then it's time for bed. It stays with you subconsciously is my point. How do we go about defining that space and say, hey, listen, you know, I'm in a relationship. We're in a relationship. We need to, you know, we need literally physical boundaries now, not just these emotional boundaries, but we're going to carve out time, but we're also going to carve out time and now separate things, items, or in this case, phones.
I think creating limits and setting boundaries around things like that is a great idea. Not to mention when you're using devices before bed, it takes your brain at least an hour to power down from the blue light, the melatonin blocking blue light.
Yep.
So it's just a really sleep hygienic practice as well. Agreeing upon a space that works for the two of you. I think beds are made for sleep and sex. So keep the phones and the laptops out.
TV too? Are we no TV?
I mean, no TV is really going to optimize things. No dogs, no children. Keep it a space that is sacred. And this actually, I think, is another good point in how to build connection between you and a partner and create safe experiences. Have some sacred rituals. Do some things together that you really, that you keep to, that you stick to, that matter to you. They can be simple, like walking the dog together on a Tuesday morning, or cooking together, or something more adventurous, like traveling, going rock climbing. But things that you do together are a way to build your connection.
And those are things that you do that are your own. So in essence, like those are separate from work life, separate from friend life. Those are
one-on-one. Those are your couples, your couples things, and they're sacred. So what that means is, even though you have a really busy schedule, you're honoring the commitment. You're honoring the fact that this is what we do on Tuesday morning. I have another couple, really busy couple, and their solution is to shower every morning together.
Oh.
Might not be the solution for everybody, but it's the one bit of time in the day that they can both carve out before emails get going and cell phones start and work picks up, where they spend a couple of minutes talking in the shower.
So you would say, you know, if you have a couple coming to you, both highly driven entrepreneurs, that number one most important is carving out that time?
Yes. Number one most important is actually being able to tolerate space and respecting space. So the big paradox about love is that you need separateness and togetherness in order to sustain love. Love is, I mean, it's tricky. It's intense. It's overwhelming. It's very vulnerable. And what the mind tries to do is it tries to foreclose that space in order to make you feel safe and protected. So what that looks like is this one person's going to be my everything, my whole world. They're going to be my lover, my confidant, my provider, my family. They're going to want me all the time. They're going to want my family all the time. It's just not really possible. It's also not really healthy. Because what happens with something that we know is so familiar and we receive over and over again? Well, it kills desire. So we want to be separate people in our relationship. It's that space that's actually sexy.
I laughed. It just makes me think of my overbearing Italian mother. And I feel like
mine too.
Italian mothers never got the handbook on space.
Right. No, enmeshment is the thing, right?
And I can imagine any woman entering my world having to deal with that. Could be
both. The space that you need and then the intensity of family.
Intensity of my overbearing Italian mother, you know, who if I let come
loves
to my house,
you.
She loves me dearly.
And who you love.
Yes, who I lived across the street from for 30
minutes. There you go.
I didn't venture far for a long time. But to me, that's so normal, whereas to a lot of people, that's totally crazy because at 18, you leave the house and you don't come back, you know. I just read a great book, and the name of it was How to Get the Love You Want, maybe. But it makes this really interesting point that...
Harville Hendrick?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the point is, we always relate back to what we know most comfortably, which is our family. So we're constantly wanting to date someone, whether we hate it or not, like our mother or women like their father, you know, in relation to. But it made the really interesting point that hypothetically, if you travel a lot for work and you are in relationship with a woman or a man whose parents never traveled, that they will never be okay with that because their model of behavior growing up was to always have dad at the dinner table. Whereas for me personally, my dad was never home for dinner. So now as an adult in my life, I see it totally normal to never be home. As I've grown older and more mature and more reflective, I see that that inherently becomes a huge problem, right? Not never being home because, you know, I think in our industry, in the wedding industry, we have an interesting issue, which is Monday through Friday, we're running our businesses. So the owners of the business, and this is who I was talking about before, those people who come in and then we have those side conversations, is the owners of the business, we're Monday to Friday running our businesses like a normal entrepreneur, except for us, we actually do the work for that business on the weekends.
So where is your off time?
Exactly. So I miss everything, birthdays, communions, parties, whatever it is,
it's
I'm not
so
there.
It's so hard in a relationship.
Yeah. I'm literally never there. I get home from work, 9 to 10 p.m. Kids are already sleeping. Dinner's already done. You know, so again, and then getting
your partner's exhausted because it's late.
And now you're on different sleep cycles even because I'm on the midnight to 8. She might be on the 9:30, 10 to 4:30 because she's got to get her workout in before the kids get up for school and her day starts. So literally, you can live in existence with someone and truly live mutually exclusive lives. How do you... For people in this scenario, how do you start to bridge that gap?
So a couple of different ideas at play. But I think that first, going back to the family, you have to have this awareness of who your family is, how you grew up, and what you want. Do you want to be the same as your family? Do you not want to be the same as your family? Did it work for you? Do you see the pluses and minuses? Do you want to edit it a little bit? And then I think you and your partner need to establish some core values for your relationship. We might just be two ships passing in the night for a lot of the time, but what really matters to us? And those things become holy, right? It matters that we see each other at least once a week and then there's no negotiating. Mm-hmm. It matters that we're always having fun. So I send you a funny text message. It matters that we are having sex somewhat regularly. Sure. So I'm staying up late and you're coming home early and we're making time. We're making time. So committing is an honoring what you've established that matters to you.
Yeah, I think it's funny you bring up the whole like sex topic, which I feel like in today's society is for whatever reason is still like this shameful thing to discuss,
is
right?
Is it? Yeah. Not in the world of a couples therapist.
But, I feel like by and large, like you just don't ever discuss those things. But when you're both operating at max levels and everything else, sometimes there's just not the physical energy.
Yeah.
It's like you get home and it's like
you're sex exhausted. Is like, it's the first to go.
Yeah, the first thing to go. Mm-hmm. But yet probably the thing that intimate time or that physical connection and then the release of the hormones that happens after, you know, a couple is intimate with one another probably brings you closer together than anything else. Yet it's the thing that we're not necessarily even setting. And then it even sounds weird. Do you set time aside for that? It's like, hey, Tuesday night's 9 o'clock, make love. You know, like
that could be a little scheduled. Yeah. That could feel a little not so fun. But what you do make time for is to kind of connect with the erotic side of the relationship, right? So there's a couple of different ideas. There's intimacy, which we talked about before, is this emotional connection. Mm-hmm. There's sex, which is the actual physical act of connecting. And then there's the erotic. And the erotic is this sense of play. Mm-hmm. It's imagination. It's a buildup. Mm-hmm. It's the I want you, but I don't have you yet.
Yep.
I can imagine what that's like. And we're going to play and think together about what that's like. But we're not actually going there yet.
Gotcha.
So an easy way to make up for the deficit in time and space to have actual sex is to play with the erotic. Mm-hmm. Here's what I want. I'm thinking of you. I drop hints. I send you a message. I call you and we play. But yeah, why not make time for sex? Maybe not in this very prescriptive Tuesday night, 9 o'clock. I'll see you there in the bed. But babe, I want some us time this week. Mm. When works?
How about I need some us time?
Yeah. I need. Yeah.
Want, need.
I want, yeah. Need. I miss you. Yeah. What do you think about that?
I think that probably would work well. I'm taking mental notes here. Yeah. I'm downloading all this into the mainframe.
Yeah. But you know, the actual crux of the matter is no matter the amount of sex doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's the quality, right?
Sure.
Just like the amount of time.
Sure.
You could have so much time with each other and it could suck because you're not connected, because you're not enjoying each other, because you're not okay with yourself. So if you are intentional about the time and then the quality of the time is good, well, you've just saved in a major investment in a way.
It's funny when you say that. I just read a really interesting passage. I think it was in Humble the Poet's book, Unlearned.
Okay.
Have you read that?
No.
So, I mean, basically it says, we're constantly living in the past, thinking of the future, and dying right now because we're literally so unpresent in our lives. We're something to that effect. But, you know, again, living yesterday, thinking of tomorrow, that we're not actually here.
Right.
And I can think back to like trying to be, you know, or wanting to be intimate with my partner. And I'm thinking about work and like literally like work is sitting on my mind. And I'm like, holy shit, like this is, it's a
pulls me out.
Yeah. It's problematic. Like how can I be present? I'm thinking about, oh, this client's driving me nuts yesterday, or I have this huge event coming up and the client's going to be really difficult and I can't actually relax or be with this person right now.
When
present.
I'm there.
Yeah. So even when I was quote unquote present, I wasn't actually present.
Yeah.
And I've noticed for me, and I think for a lot of people who are so entrepreneurial driven, you know, I use the word obsessed. We become obsessed with it. And then our life frames around, because we're obsessed, we justify all the means to the end there because we've created and framed out our world to say, I'm so obsessed, which is the worst word. You know, it's not like I'm driven, it's obsession.
Yeah, it's taking over.
Correct. And then now everything we do fuels that one word. So I say, I'm obsessed with becoming successful. Everything plays back into that. And then you lose sight of being present, being in the relationship, being in the moment, being intimate, all
and
of it.
And the point of being successful because you can't enjoy it.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're not even enjoying the moments of success because you're thinking about
the next.
How do we stay? So we talked about when you walked in, we talked about mindfulness, and this is the perfect segue into that, right? So is it, you know, before I get home, whether I'm walking home on the train, I literally stop and take those 10 breaths to like be like, all right, that was a work day.
I'm cleansing. Cleanse my energy out. Yeah, I think that's breath work, as we talked about, is an incredibly potent practice. It's also so easy. You can do it anywhere. It's free. Just breathe. Reduce the tension in your nervous system. Oxygenate your brain. Beautiful practice. So that can be taking even inhalations and exhalations, and at least 5 of them. It could also be developing a more regular mindfulness practice. So everywhere you go, you pay attention to your surroundings. When you're in the midst of something tense or just not really doing anything at all, you put your hands on your lap and you notice a sensation. You ground your feet on the floor. You notice a sensation. Simple, easy, can be done anywhere. Or you learn to sit and you develop a meditation practice.
What about for people like myself, where literally shutting off the brain is so hard? So I've tried to meditate many times, and I'm like, all right. And then I start thinking about work.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm like, all right, this is having the exact opposite effect of what I needed. And you know, I read something really powerful recently by Marcus Aurelius, and it was true success is being content, not with anything in the world except where you are. So no matter what moment you're in, you don't need to be on a beach on vacation. It's being content within yourself no matter where you are. And I was like, wow, that makes total sense. So it's walk in the city, sitting in my house, whatever it is, but to actually reflect back and be present in that moment is actually the true point of success.
Yeah. And it's a muscle that needs to get built and practiced and flexed over and over again. You know, there's nothing wrong with setting some time aside during the day for concentration. And then there's sitting and meditating, where you're not going to be devoid of thoughts. The thoughts are always going to arise. It's about learning how to acknowledge them and let them go. So I wish I had an easy way to tell you how to do that, but it's simply through learning to sit with. So one technique that I like and use sometimes with clients is imagining a thought as a cloud, right? A cloud passing through your mind, changing shape, evolving into something else, and just letting it go. So something enters and it passes, and it enters and it passes. I mean, that is what all things in life are. They're things that come up and then eventually they move.
It's funny. Somebody gave me a really good comparison. They said, you can't be anxious or have anxiety or think about all those things when you're in motion. So they said, and they made the example to like my dog. They go, when your dog is on a walk, all he's thinking about is one foot in front of the other, right? He's walking.
Right.
And he's happy.
Yeah.
So I go for really long walks because meditating just for me, it actually, I feel like had the adverse effect, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Walking can be totally meditative. Yeah.
And I'd go on these like 2 hour or 3 hour walks and I'd come back and I'd feel amazing.
Yeah.
Like literally like almost like that, not a runner's high, but that endorphin high of like, wow, that felt great. And I was like,
and physically you just released
exactly,
so much tension.
And all that tension now is gone. That work tension left. And I see it with my dog. Like the more he walks, the more fun he has, the better I know this sounds so weird, but psychologically he's actually in a better state. Now he needs to do that as an animal, but I feel like we've gotten so far away
from our bodies.
We're animals as well.
Our emotions and our tensions. Literally, the fascia, right, which is the encasement of the muscles, holds trauma. So the way that, you know, you also need to work with pain, suffering, and trauma is to release the body.
I just read something recently that someone had the psoas tension.
Right? Oh, yes.
And so I bought a psoas. I went in, it was like $70, and it's like this two-prong. Have you ever seen it?
No.
Okay, I'll show you. It's like this two-prong thing, and you literally lay on it, and it inserts itself into you, so you could do deep tissue manipulation into your psoas. And I didn't know my psoas was tight, but someone was like, trust me, the amount of work and stress you're under, you have a tight psoas. Factual. I literally laid on this thing and almost cried. And I did it every day for like 30 days. And all of a sudden I'm like, wow, my back feels better. I have less tension in my body. They're like, your psoas is the only muscle that connects your upper torso to your lower torso. And we're constantly sitting. We're constantly stressed out. And our psoas literally is constricting our body.
And we also don't really know how to walk properly. So that tightens it as well. But in terms of like the chakra system, the point that corresponds to your hips is also where you hold relational tension. So
interesting.
Yeah.
So men and women.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah. So releasing the hips is also a way of releasing what is stuck in us about our relationships.
So how do you integrate your yoga practice into your therapy practice?
So I mean, I have a deep personal practice that's been a really important part of my life. And then I did my yoga teacher training a couple of years ago as a way of learning mindfulness, meditation, breath work to incorporate with and to teach patients. It also informs my, just my worldview, what I believe. I think that spirituality is an important part of connecting with humans and humans connecting with other humans. So it is my spiritual practice. And I use that to inform just the way I show up. It also helps me to be present with people so that I can hear and be with them. You know, I see a fair amount of people every week. And without having my own version of release, you can get clogged.
I was going to say, you probably, that weight, there's got to be a transference, right?
Oh, yeah.
People are typically not coming to you like, oh, life is so amazing. It's
sometimes they do, and that's great. But it's not always.
So that's your own way of releasing that?
Yes, that's absolutely my own way of releasing that. And I think too, the asana, I mean, asana to me is a wonderful practice, but the point, and historically the point, has always been to move your body, to tire your body so that you can then sit and settle your mind. So that's why the movement is incredibly important. While I don't use movement per se in my practice, I do encourage people to find ways that they can incorporate it too. So I may give them a tip or a pose or a, you know, an idea, recommend a mode for them to release this tension. But as we've said, you've got to also access the body.
It's interesting. I find that when I do hot yoga, I could be so angry at the world. And when I walk out, I am the most peaceful, literally human. There's not an ounce of anxiety, anger, frustration left in my body.
Literally, I mean, also tired.
Well, I'm also tired. But there's nothing left. I mean, it's gone. I mean, and I'm not great at yoga by any means.
It's
I'm the least flexible
that.
Person in the class.
Not about
I
that.
Struggle through. But when I walk out of there, I just go, and that the weight of the world just comes off me. So literally there's no anger left in your body, right? How does that then translate, right? So if I can exert that energy, how does that make me more of a present partner?
First of all, to have the release is useful because then you're not projecting onto your partner things that don't belong to them. But it's in the actual practice of yoga that you begin to develop your presence, right? So you're paying attention to poses. You're moving with awareness mindfully. And through the practice of the actual movement, you still your mind. You learn to the feeling of what it is to drop in, and you start to develop that muscle memory. So you can try and apply the same thing in your relationship with your partner. You slow down. You move intentionally. You listen to what they're saying. You feel what you're feeling, right? When you're holding a pose and you're like, I wish this would be over. I wish this would be over. But at the same time, my hip is really lengthening. You can hold those similar feelings in your relationship with your partner. I wish this would end, but wait, we're getting somewhere.
So for the high people who want to have that work life, the highest entrepreneurial playground per se, the amount of attention we put into our business, right? We
attention need to, or intention?
Intention. Yep. How do we match that in our private life?
I'm not sure that you have to match it. But you have to make room for it. You know, the business might be the thing that takes up all of your energy, most of your energy and most of your space, and you've agreed upon that in your relationship. Or maybe it's flipped. Maybe the relationship takes up more of the space at certain times. I think it can be fluid, but I think that space needs to be carved out. There really isn't so much of an easy way of doing it except making a choice and being committed to that choice, just like you're committed to the choice that you make every day about your business of growing it, being focused, being on top of it. You have to make a choice. Humans aren't capable of doing it all. And that's another issue of the moment right now, right? We have so much, we have access to everything in no time. But as humans, we have limited capacities. We must refuel. So might seem ironic, but in order to be your best self in your relationship, you might have to pull back and just take care of you.
I know for me personally, if I push, if I redline my body, I get sick. So that's my thing. Like I can go 37 days, no days off, literally 15 hours a day.
That's a lot.
And I will crash at the end of that.
Yeah.
And just off the cliff, I'll wind up with like strep throat, flu, in bed for 5 days, and then it starts again. So I've in my own life said, okay, you know, like yesterday was a day where I could have done stuff. I just needed to shut it down. Like it just, I went like 18 days in a row, no time for me. And yesterday just needed to be outdoors. Mm-hmm. Thank God it was nice out, right? Mm-hmm. But just that own personal time. And today I woke up feeling so much better than I did yesterday, right? Yeah. That one day just to refresh the clock, you know, maybe spend time having a great conversation with someone about something that we both are
inspired
into.
By.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
so I think it can be hard for a partner to understand that if you're already stretched so thin and aren't bringing enough to the relationship that you step back and take care of yourself. But it's vital because you can't give unless you have what to give. I think also knowing what inspires you, right? Just like knowing what makes the intimacy really sweet between you and your partner, being able to step back and say, oh, this is the kind of thing that nourishes me. So I'm going to go do that thing I love. Like for me, I love to travel and I love to take photos. Kind of like you.
I see. And so, I've been keeping up. That's a good idea.
Oh, thank you. So that's an easy way for me to drop in, be present, develop that presence in my life, and then be able to bring that back, be refreshed, and bring my refreshed self back to my relationship.
And you find that so loving ourselves allows us to love.
Caring. Yeah. Caring for ourselves. If we don't take care of ourselves, you just have nothing left to give.
And what about integrating your own passion? So like you talk about how, like I can see you, when you talk about yoga, right? Like there's obviously a deep, not just spiritual, but a love for it. You have affinity to it, right? Mm-hmm. So I would assume that in your relationship, whatever that may be, you would want a partner who either A, appreciates that, or B, maybe wants to drop in every once in a while and take a yoga class with you. And maybe that's his way of saying, hey, I love you. And that's your connection, but it's yours separately.
Yeah.
Maybe he integrates himself or she into whatever it may be.
Sure. I think that, you know, personally for me, that would be a fine thing, but it's also very much a fine thing if it's my space and I own it. That is my special practice. And that is the kind of separateness that I can tolerate. I might not be okay, let's say, going alone to a family event and I would want somebody to show up for me there, but I have no problem saying, this is my thing. Actually, you stay home. You stay home, appreciate it, respect it, honor it because it matters to me.
Sure.
But I don't need you to be a part of it. And so that is kind of the idea of separateness and togetherness, this difficulty in love. But what really matters is that you establish what that looks like for you and your partner. It's highly individualized, highly specific.
It's interesting as you say this and you talk about coming to family events, right? So I think about, you know, just my own personal struggles with never being there, you know, and I can't imagine being on the flip side of that, right? Mm-hmm. Which is my partner not having me, right? And is that a conversation? Is that like first three dates? Like you're like, hey, listen, okay, this is how it goes. Like you need to know what you're getting yourself into.
Yep.
I'm never around.
Yep.
And as long as I'm in this industry following this career path, chances are, you know, if I'm gone 30 to 40 weekends a year, which is primarily what I have, that leaves 12 to 15 weekends. Unless it falls on one of those weekends, I'm just not there.
Right.
And it might be a 40th birthday. It might be a, you know, your best friend's wedding, you know, and if I'm just not going to be able to make it, or if I get there, I'm going to get there at 1 a.m. for the after party. And that's, you know, and it sucks, but it's just, unfortunately, it's
the way it is for you in your world right now.
Yeah. Right now, this is currently the world I exist in. So do you actually have that conversation? Like, hey, this is what's going on.
Absolutely. You lay that out on the line, and the sooner the better, because it allows somebody to decide whether or not they can sign up for that. And somebody might think they can, and then in practice actually can't because it's hard. But I mean, there are totally ways to make that work.
How much should we look at our parents, right? So if you're about to enter into a relationship with somebody, how much do we look at their parents and go, okay, I see this, this, and this.
In their parents?
Uh-huh. Or you know, or for the person vice versa, you know, looks at me and goes, okay, I've met, you know, Hector and Lucy, right? And I see this, this, and this. It's fair to say that some of those characteristic traits inherently, subconsciously or consciously, are going to carry over. Like I said, with my dad,
they are.
He just was never home. So I've grown up with that as my male model.
Right.
And
it being normal. And now you're never home.
And now inherently, like, I don't even think about it as it's not even until it was brought up and someone said, hey, you know, you're really never home. I was like, oh, like, that's a pro, like, what do you mean? Like,
right. It's a given.
It's a given, you know? And they're like, well, what about family dinner? I'm like, family dinner. I'm like, there was no, my dad was off Sundays and Mondays. Like, there was no family dinners for the most part. Like, it was when he was off, and then most of the time he still worked. So, right. But he had to. And again, that gets into like our roles as masculinity and what was, you know, again, as being coming over, immigrating to
sure.
this country.
Sure. There's so many factors.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of our grandparents didn't have that luxury of saying, I'm going to take Sunday off. It's right. No, I have to feed my family.
Right. So I'll be at work.
Now we're in a different world now. Right. And I feel it's personally, and I know I struggle with this. I know a lot of men struggle with it. More is expected of us now.
Totally.
In the sense of, it's not just go to work, put food on the table. He's my hero.
No, it's be emotionally available. Yeah. Show up, be present, be here for me when I cry. But more is also expected of women, right? Mm. Make a living, go out there, have babies, raise babies, hold the family down. Mm.
Isn't it funny how men never think of it that way?
Well, I'm glad I'm here.
it's true, though, because we always go, more is expected of us. We never go, women's roles have drastically changed.
Oh, my God, yeah, we've skyrocketed. Uh-huh. Now the amount that we have to do is more than ever. And the amount that we expect from each other has also just multiplied. What we expect from one person used to be what we would have a village for, right?
So true.
Raising a family, taking care of the food, the hunting, the gathering, the women would go off. They would have each other for emotional support. Some cultures still exist like this. I was recently in India, and tradition remains intact there in many ways, and so does communal living. But we exist in a much more isolated way. I mean, here in New York City, especially.
Sure. Yeah, I always find it ironic. I moved into a high-rise building, and I've been there 3 months. I've had no conversations.
Right.
It's so strange. I know none of my neighbors' names.
You're pretty chatty.
I'm pretty. I can talk. I know none of my neighbors' names. I know I live next to a guy who was not born in the U.S. I don't know where he's from, and he travels a lot because I see him in a suitcase. That's it. Like, and yeah, you're right. Like, we just don't have those. And I know you grew up, you're the Italian neighborhood. Like, you know your neighbors.
Yeah, Brooklyn Italian neighborhood.
And that's almost like, I feel like that, it's almost at the end, that community in Brooklyn where, you know, like, everyone grew up on the block.
Yep.
Your doors were unlocked.
Yep.
No, but I mean, you know, every neighbor knew each other. Mom would be like, oh, she's next door. And this way, you know, like, when you come home, you're eating dinner next door at the neighbors. It doesn't matter because everyone was family. And that's almost gone now here too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in many ways, community, the sense of community has kind of died, mm-hmm. right? Although we're completely communal species, we're connecting in different ways. We're connecting online. We're not connecting face to face. We're not necessarily having family dinners with each other. So being a community with your partner matters a lot. But it almost matters too much. Mm. You can't expect one person to be your whole world.
Mm. It's tough sometimes.
It is tough. It is tough. I think it's the social expectation, and it's suffocating.
How do you politely create that space in a loving way, right? So you have that situation where your partner's like, oh, you know, and you're like, oh, like, how do you tell someone?
What is this?
This is like.
Is this panic?
You know, how do you say to somebody, look, I love you dearly. Uh-huh. I want to be with you a lot.
Yeah.
Just like 90% of the time, not 100. Like I need 10% for myself. And that could be, you know, I want to go race my car really fast. And that's something I need to do. Like that's something that I love doing. Or, you know, I just want to go for a walk by myself today.
Right.
Like I need an hour to myself, right? I need that space that we're talking about, because if I don't get that space, you know, for me, and I know for other entrepreneurs, it's the same thing. We're always everything to everyone. And I feel like I always say, like, men always want to have the answer. Entrepreneurs want to have the answer for everyone, male or female, right? You're the top, right? So everyone's in the organization coming to you. You're the problem solver. You're the one who takes care of everybody. Mm-hmm. And all too often, we forget
come back to the family. That's expected as well.
And then not to mention, you know, with success comes the burden of family responsibility and who now you're taking care of in your family and all those different factors. But we sometimes lose sight of ourselves because we're constantly giving, you know, and I always say entrepreneurs, you know, I think right now we're getting a bad bash in politically, right? Like people are saying billionaires and all these things, horrible things about them. But in many times they're the most giving of people because they're the ones at the top of the organization who are now helping all these other people achieve their dreams. But we forget to love ourselves.
So disconnection is pretty devastating, mm-hmm. right? we've all felt it when you're with somebody and you just feel like you're not connecting. It's really painful. And I think in order to kind of create boundaries around what you need and what you can give, you have to keep that in mind, right? You don't want your partner to feel as though you're disconnected from them. But it's also completely valid that you have needs of your own. So to have a loving conversation keeps that in mind and maybe look something along the lines of, I love you. This relationship is a priority to me. How can I show you that? What does that look like for you? There are a couple of other things that matter to me, like I've got to race my car or I've got to run my business. But I don't want you to feel neglected in the meantime, in the space when I'm out doing those other things. It's not because I don't love you. It's because I do love you and I want to build a life for us. But in order to do that, I've got to do me.
It's just sort of flip it around, right? I was reading something recently and I think it said in America, 70% of Americans are unhappy at work. 20% are discontentful at work. 10% are happy. So literally 300+ million people right now, 10% of our country is actually happy with what they go to do to the work. Now, when we look at that to the relationship, we're bringing 90% of people in this country are
bringing home discontent
at work.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you're not happy at work, it ruins every aspect of your life, right? Because you're going to work and that's where we spend in essence, most of our time.
Yeah. Yeah.
24 hours in a day, 10 to 12 could be spent at work normally. That's half our more than it's 70% of our waking hours. Then if we go to the gym for an hour, maybe we see our partner. There's very little time when you think about it if you actually want to get a good night's 7 to 8 hour sleep. But with that being said, how do you leave that discontent to work and not let it really, I feel like discontent at work can be equivalent to a cancer in a relationship where it starts to eat away at you.
And then take over.
Yeah. And then ultimately it takes over your psyche, your spirit, and you just literally have nothing left to give. And I know we went through some stuff here in my office 6 months ago and I didn't necessarily have the team in my office. When I walked in, I didn't go, man, I love being with these people today.
Yeah.
I went, love being with some of them. I could do without the others. And one day I walked in and told my office manager, I said, Sylvia, we need to fire half the office. She's like, today? I'm like, today sounds like a good day. And she was like,
hope you were thinking about it and not that impulsive about it, but okay. She's going with the gut.
Remember we talked about outsourcing? Yeah. She's my rational mind, right?
Right.
So I'm like, today sounds like a good day. She's like, well, maybe not all of them. Like, wait, you have a business to run? And I need them to run that business. I'm like, okay, let's start with one, right? And then next week, I'm like, you know, I think the other two should go too. And she goes, today? I'm like, today sounds good. Maybe wanted to kill me in that moment, but it literally.
Well, that's a luxury.
It was a luxury.
That's a luxury most Americans don't have, you know, as an entrepreneur. Yeah, you're running the ship, so you can do that.
Well, I like to say I didn't fire them. They fire themselves by their attitude.
Yeah, I hear
you
that.
But
and sometimes it's actually creating an opening for somebody else to release them from somewhere where they are discontent.
Yes,
so
and they
do give them something.
I felt like we gave them the gift of freedom.
Yeah.
But I've seen a change in myself. Mm-hmm. And my point of now with this work, when I walk into work and I'm surrounded by people who I love, who love me back, who have the respect, I leave work way happier.
Yeah.
And the clients could be so bad one day. It doesn't even matter because now I'm with people and everyone's cool.
Well, really, what is that about? That's about having a team, right? A space and people that you can go to and you can just kind of let it be with, let it out to hang and know that you're going to be supportive. Mm.
So I know you're working on some cool stuff, right?
Yeah.
So what can we talk about that you're working on?
What do
you
want to
talk
about?
I know you have some cool projects, so let's go.
I'm starting an Instagram community at The Relationshipist. And I'm really excited about it just as a space to inspire people to improve their relationships with themselves as we started out with, and also relationships with others. So that looks like friends, family, romantic partners, as a place where you can just kind of come get ideas, see some beautiful images, because now you know that's another important thing to me, but really feel inspired. Right?
Okay.
Like fill back up. I also down the line have a project that I'm developing with a partner where we are designing a program for women in specific life moments. So
we'll run with that one day.
First one might be for brides. Right. We'll just have to wait and see.
We'll have you back on potentially.
I would love that.
When that happens.
Thank you for having me today.
No. We're going to have you back on when we talk about that. So which segues as you bring up brides.
Yes. Right?
And I didn't mean potentially. When that happens, we will have you back on. So let's make sure we differentiate that. But we talk about brides. Obviously, I'm in the wedding industry.
Yes.
Right? Something I have to pick your brain about now.
Sure.
So I'm a bride, let's pretend, right?
Okay.
The anxiety leading into this event, you know, I always say, you know, ultimately it's just 5 hours of your life, but we've magnified these events specifically in New York. On average, we spend twice as more than any other economy in the country, here in the city on weddings. And I always say I live in fairy tale land.
Yeah, right? Totally.
We've had the opportunity to work together.
Yes.
But we live in a land where, you know, we have this luxury of spending an exorbitant amount of money on what is 5 hours. It's fleeting. And I think I see the almost like this psychological buildup of attention. Mm-hmm. And then there's the attention dump.
Totally.
Right. So the wedding happens and then it's like, oh shit, it's over.
Now what?
And I'm the only vendor they talk to afterwards.
Oh, that's true.
So they've had this huge high, you know, and it was like Michael Phelps wins gold medal and he talks about it when he got home. He was like so depressed.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, in relation to a wedding, it's in essence, that's that gold moment for a lot of people.
Yes.
When I don't think it necessarily should be.
No, of course not.
And how do, for the people who are listening who are brides, right? How do they start with coming over that hurdle and now having a different purpose, right? Because the wedding's done, the attention's gone, and real life now is here.
Yeah, I think post-wedding actually begins pre-wedding.
Ah.
So having a scope of what this means to you, and it's not your entire world. You know, we spend double the amount of most incomes simply chasing a fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, for many people, a wedding experience is, right? But that's not all that it is. What gets missed is the marriage. The very exciting part of getting married is this lifelong partnership that the two of you are committing to. So if you step back and remind yourself, this is a moment, and it might be a great moment, and it might be one of the most meaningful moments of my life, but it's also just a moment. So inevitably, I know it's going to end. I've got to prepare myself for that in advance. I don't need to get completely lost in it. This doesn't define me. It's important
to
me.
They quit their jobs.
That's intense.
Intense.
And I mean, and leaves you with nothing.
Mm-hmm. To plan that literally they will step down from a nice position at a well-known bank for 6 months to plan a wedding.
And that will ruin a relationship. Because then what you don't have is your own identity, your own place to go, your own things to invest in. So stepping back and scaling the expectations for that one day, knowing that it's a day that's going to end. Yeah, you'll be sad when your wedding's over. It was fun. It was fun to plan, right? It was fun. There was all of this attention. Maybe your family rallied around you. Maybe your friends rallied around you. You felt really celebrated. But you can take that with you.
Mm.
Those are feelings that, just because the moment is over, those feelings of being loved and cherished can be remembered. And they come with you. Actually begin the work. And I think that's something that gets very missed. Relationships, marriages, whatever form your partnership is a lot of work. It's hard to be with somebody, to meet their needs, to be vulnerable, for your own needs to come up and not be met. So a wedding is not just a fantasy and a fairy tale.
Yeah, I think also too, one thing I see is the merger of families.
Yeah.
And I truly feel this way, certain families should not merge.
Yeah.
After doing this now for 24 years,
Yeah. There
are just times when I'm there.
Yeah,
and
you can smell it.
You literally see it and I'm going, some people go, can you tell? I'm like, yeah. Immediately. I'm like, because now I get to see the back end of that a lot of times, which is
right. They're
fighting over the photography contract. I'm like, whoa, like your kids aren't even married yet. And
right. You're
bickering over who's going to go first during family pictures.
Right.
Some really arbitrary stuff that comes up. And I see that and I'm going, what's going to happen when there's grandkids? You know,
yeah.
Which family gets to see the kid first at birth? Like,
yeah.
I mean, and I feel like some of those conversations are there. And people don't realize, you know, you're not just marrying your partner.
No, you're marrying their family.
You're marrying your family, you know.
You're also marrying their history.
You know,
yeah, the people carry
so
with
yeah.
them. So that's an interesting thing about doing couples therapy is it's really not just three of us in the room, right? There are so many people that we carry with us. And if you're somebody like me who's spiritual and believes in multiple lives, then I really, you know, believe that we're carrying things with us from past lives as well.
I mean, it makes total sense. Like, you know, I feel like I carry so much of my family's upbringing into my current life and relationship and how my parents modeled right or wrong. It's inherently who I am. And sometimes I don't even realize what I'm doing because it's so subconscious.
Yeah.
And now I'm going, well, if you're going to be in a relationship with me, you know, the older I get, the more I remind myself of my father. And I'm like, ooh, sometimes, you know, like now I'll do things. I'm like, that's so my dad. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's so my dad.
Or I say something and I'm literally like, was that my mother?
Yeah, I'll be like, that's so my father. And I'm like, oh my God. And
it's a part of you.
It's part of
you. It's just a part of you. Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, for that partner though, you have to, some of that stuff, you know, people say, well, you can change all of it. I don't know necessarily. Can you?
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I don't think that you remain a carbon copy of your family. Mm. You have the agency to say, my dad was like that and I didn't like that, so I don't want to be that way. Or, you know what, my dad was like that and he was great. So that's something that I'm going to embrace in myself. I think what you have to be prepared for is the fact that you're going to carry your family stuff with you, and then you have the agency to choose how much of it you want to incorporate into your life now or how much you want to change. Humans are incredibly resilient.
How much agency do we actually have?
A lot. I think we have a lot. I mean, listen, you can sit and meditate and you begin to rewire your brain in a matter of 15 seated meditation sessions. So we are totally elastic. It's a matter, I think, more of willingness and openness. People can be taught, they can learn, but you have to want to. You have to want to change. You have to want to commit the time to the relationship. You have to want to improve yourself in order to actually do it.
So theoretically, it's like, all right, I'm going to climb Mount Everest. If we applied that same energy into our relationship status,
yeah,
sky's the limit.
Literally.
Literally, sky's
the limit. Up to the clouds.
So we can potentially see some female empowerment workshops. Is that the
That's not exactly on the horizon, but it's a great idea.
Right, well, I'd say I'd come, but I don't know. How about some men in empowerment workshops on how to be better partners?
Yep. I think that is a great idea. You know, somebody you might be interested in reading and following a bit is Terry Real.
Yeah.
So do you know him?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, okay. So he does a lot of talk about this paradox of masculinity and really empowering men to be more present, more involved, more vulnerable, more aware.
Cool. Well, I want to be respectful of your time. I know you have a practice to run and
I have a bunch of awesome things to run back to. But
I want to just thank you for having this conversation with me. This was really awesome. And I think one of the best benefits of doing this show and podcast is having really amazing conversations with really intelligent people like yourself who are insightful and thoughtful and mindful, you know? And I just want to commend you for that. I want to commend you for your work. I want to thank you for taking the time to sit with me and do this. If you would just tell everyone where they can find you, how to connect with you on two levels. Number one, if they want to just see what you're doing on social, and two, maybe they need help in their relationship, they want some insight, how do they become mindful, how do they work on their partner, how do they reach you through your professional work as well?
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. It's been a lot of fun. So social, I can be found at The Relationshipist on Instagram. And the best way for people to get in touch with me is through my website. So it's just www.francescashoshone.com.
We will provide show notes on how to spell that.
It's a doozy. I know.
How to spell that last name. But again, I just want to thank you. You're a beautiful person. Thank you for the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
I look forward to doing this again with you.
So do I.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening in. You can find us online at anthonyvasquezworkshops.com, as well as on social, on Instagram, Facebook, and on YouTube at Anthony Vasquez Workshops. We look forward to seeing you there.